Welcome to Zing Talk, where Benzinga brings you the biggest names and brightest minds from Silicon Valley to New York City. I'm your host, Jason Raznick. Today, our guest is Marty Connor, the CFO of Toll Brothers, a residential and commercial real estate development company. Connor came to Toll Brothers with more than 20 years of experience. He previously worked at Ernst & Young. He also founded and operated a successful finance and accounting consulting practice. Marty, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Jason. Thanks for calling me up.
Yeah, we're glad to have you on. I guess we'll just get right into the questions. You've replaced Joe Rassman, who passed away last September. What is it like to follow in the footsteps of a man with such a brilliant career?
Well, Joel is certainly irreplaceable and invaluable. While he was here at Toll Brothers and certainly in the legacy he's left, not only with me, who was privileged to work side by side with him for his last 2 years here, but with the entire finance team and operations team that's been here at Toll. It's been, it was a joy to have the 2 years to learn from Joel, and it's been a little bit bittersweet ever since. I joked that I always looked forward to him being in the back seat as he handed the reins over to me, and unfortunately he's not there right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's tough in a situation like this, and, you know, I'm sure he'd be proud of what you're doing with the company and your stewardship.
He did a great job of positioning the company through the downturn and to emerge stronger than ever out of the downturn. We, under Joel's stewardship, have one of the strongest, if not the strongest, balance sheets in the industry, and we maintain investment-grade ratings from two of the three rating agencies, despite our business being off 75% from the top of the market.
Which is definitely nothing short of it, a very impressive feat to be able to do that in the market we've been in the past couple of years.
Absolutely. The home builders, all of them have done a pretty good job of surviving that kind of volume drop. The business model is such that when you start shrinking, you generate cash, and so long as you're bond maturities are appropriately laddered or refinanceable, you can survive because you're collecting money from the disposition of your land and improvements and homes while not making reinvestments in land and improvements.
Got it. Now, we're starting to see some signs of recovery, but the real estate market is still seems like it's suffering. Do you expect to see any improvements in the coming months?
Well, we're optimistic that we may see some improvement, but we're also cautious, and I'd say we're emphasizing the word cautious. It is a great time to buy a home, but our home purchase decision by our buyers is very confidence sensitive, and confidence has not returned to the extent that we'd like to see it returned to the consumer. I think they aren't as concerned as they were 18 to 24 months ago about job loss. I think if they've survived this long with a job, they're comfortable. But it is a sizable investment that we're asking them to make into a new home. And despite all-time highs in affordability and near all-time lows in mortgage rates, they still have a little hesitancy at this point.
Do you expect this, like, spring shopping season to be better than last year's?
Well, I think through the first 3 weeks of February, which is kind of the first 3 weeks of the spring selling season, as we announced at our earnings release for the January 31st, 2011 first quarter, we had a 9% increase in deposits, which is the second step behind traffic in moving to the third step, which is an agreement. And that was actually up 15% on a gross basis and 9% on a per community basis. So we're increasing the number of communities that we are offering homes for sale out of. And we are encouraged by that uptick and encouraged even more so by the fact that it's truly organic. There is not any benefit coming from a tax credit like there was in the comparable period
Got
a
it.
Year ago.
Yeah, and that, but I mean, one thing that in our local market, which is Michigan, we've seen a lot of pent-up demand here where people held off buying several months looking to, you know, this season as the season where they're going to get the best deal and hopefully the most availability comes on the market. So hopefully that supply and demand finally, you know, starts meeting where it should be.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons we have some optimism is the pent-up demand that has to be, I'll say, accumulating. It's widely expected that households will form each year for the next 10 years, pursuant to Harvard study anyhow, at 1.6 million households. Homes are torn down in America at about 300,000 to 400,000 a year. And right now the industry is only building somewhere between 250,000 and 400,000 homes. So we'll have a supply-demand imbalance at some point. And in some markets we may be seeing the first little bits of that. Real estate is a micro-market based, so there's excess homes in a place that people don't want to live. That's not really relevant to a shortage of homes where people do want to live.
Do you, you said that, like, right now the industry is building around 200,000 to 250,000 homes. Is that what you're saying annually?
250,000 to 400,000 homes, based on the national census data.
What were they building, like, or what was the industry building closer to the highs or anything like that?
In the height of the market, it was approximately 2 million units, but on average for the last 40 years, it's been 1.5 to 1.6 million units.
Interesting. So with household formation and you know, the number of houses being torn down, there's going to be a point where there's the supply isn't going to meet the demand.
Correct. I mean, right now I think there is pent-up demand as, you know, kids live with their parents a little longer, or they room three to an apartment rather than two or rather than one. Mm-hmm. And you can only live with mom and dad so long before either you want to move out or they want you to move out. And the same often happens with roommate situations.
Exactly. Absolutely. Another question that, you know, do you or Toll have a viewpoint of where things in the real estate market are going to be going in the next 2 to 4 years? I know that's a hard thing to ask, but just curious.
Well, I think we're pretty confident that we've hit the bottom in most markets, and now it's a question of do we continue to bounce along the bottom or do things start to tick upwards? And I think the demographic stats that we cited earlier are indicative that it's got to get better sometime. The question is when that time is, and we're positioned to take advantage of whenever that time is with the lot holdings we have and the balance sheet we have, but we're not in the forecasting game to say when it's going to be.
Got it. What do you think some of the keys are to revitalizing the housing market, or do you think the government should be doing more to help the recovery?
Well, I think confidence is a key driver of the recovery of the housing market, and we could all use the housing market to recover because it's so tied to personal worth, personal net worth, as well as just jobs. You know, when the industry was building 1 million to 1.5 million more homes than it's building now, that's a lot of people who were at work, either pounding nails, laying carpet, selling drapes, building furniture, whatever, and part of the unemployment problem in this country is a result of the fewer homes being constructed. So I think we need confidence to tick up before we see more people in the market, and I think slowly but surely we're getting there. The general economic news has been relatively positive over the last 3 or 4 months. Unemployment rates coming down a little bit. I think everybody feels a little bit better about that. In terms of what the government can do, should do, shouldn't do, I think right now I think there's a lot of focus on mortgage reform or mortgage finance reform, and that takes a number of different shapes. What's going to happen with the government-sponsored entities, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac? What's the deductibility of the mortgage going to be going forward? What is the minimum down payment that might be necessary? And I think when we look at all those different questions that are currently overhanging the housing industry, we say this is not the time to be evaluating those changes. We need to let housing heal on its own based on the old rules. When it's healthy, we can, it might be an appropriate time to consider making changes to the historical rules. So we're not looking for a tax credit. We're not sure that the tax credit that was enacted a year ago accomplished what it was supposed to. It did not apply to new homes. So in many cases, it did not create additional jobs and actually was just money going to people who were going to buy a home anyway. So I'm not sure what it spurred.
Now, one of the things I did in preparation for this interview was talking to a couple people in the mortgage business. One of the things they were seeing is people with great credit, phenomenal credit. A lot of people are self-employed more so these days versus working for other companies, and having they're having difficult times getting approved for loans where they actually have a decent down payment. Do you think the government or there should, I mean, they just let the free market settle itself and find that, well, there's a lender that comes in and helps these people that have, you know, phenomenal credit, significant down payments, but need a little bit of help with a mortgage, and currently Fannie Mae and Freddie and all those places don't have products like that anymore?
Well, I think we're fortunate in that, you know, 18% of our buyers pay cash. Of the other 82%, the average down payment we're seeing is 30% down payment, and we generally have an average of a FICO score from our buyers of 750 to 760. So they're great credits, as you describe. We're able, through our mortgage company, to find financing for them, whether they're self-employed, whether they're doctors, whether they're lawyers. There's a lot more paperwork they got to go through, and there's not as much money for those particular types of situations where the income's a little difficult to prove because you're vouching for yourself. We haven't had some of the problems that you're referring to, and I think that's a function of having the mortgage company and its broad reach.
Got it. Okay, interesting. Do you think there should be other, you know, you briefly mentioned FHA. Do you feel that program is very useful, or should it be modified from what it currently is doing and some of the changes that are coming forth, I think, in the next, like, in April or something?
Well, I think, you know, the FHA has programs where you can get a home for 3.5% down. There's an extra interest rate or a fee that comes along with that, but that's an attractive program for entry-level buyers or people who are just trying to begin accumulating some down payment money or equity in a home. So for the right buyer, it makes a lot of sense. Now, we sell very few homes under that program or using that program as the financing vehicle. So it's not that big of a deal for us directly, but since most of our buyers have a home to sell, anything that benefits the low end trickles up and helps us at the luxury end. I think the lessons that we need to have learned over the last 4 or 5 years is that if we're going to issue those kind of mortgages as a country, we need to make sure we have the right underwriting standards behind them. And I think at this point, many of those standards have been refined and are appropriate.
Interesting. What are some of the things that Toll did to persevere during these hard times? I know you briefly mentioned it, you know, your predecessor, CFO, you preserved cash. Any other things that stick out that you guys did that has, you know, caused you guys to be successful now?
Well, I think, you know, on the kind of proactive front, we stopped buying land. We walked away from some option contracts where we had the option to buy land and chose not to. We were conservative in our spending of cash. More painfully, we went from 7,500 employees down to 2,500 employees. So you can imagine that's a tough environment to ask your team to put up with, but it was necessary as part of this downturn. Generally looked for opportunities in our operations to save costs in the components and in the subcontractors and in the way we operate, all with no negative impact on our quality and our brand, because that's so important to us. And on some select occasions, we disposed of large parcels of land in strategic transactions where we thought it was more advantageous to dispose of the land, get the cash, rather than to hold it, even though the carry cost of holding it are relatively nominal.
Got it. Have you seen any changes, drastic changes recently, positive or negative, from any of the areas that you guys operate in?
Well, I think New York urban is our best market right now. It's a market where we have some limited pricing power, meaning we can raise prices on occasion and reduce incentives. We have certain communities around the country where we have the right product at the right price in the right location, and they move pretty well. In Philadelphia urban, we have a community, Naval Square, that has sold more than 50 units this year, and in the last 12 months. And in suburban Philadelphia, we have another community where we opened it 6 months ago, and it's sold nearly 30 units. So that gives us optimism that if we have the right product and the right price and the right location, it's going to move almost regardless of the level of confidence or economic times we find ourselves in.
And that's
around the rest of the country, 60% of our business is between Boston and Northern Virginia. And that's a market that didn't get super hot in the height of it, and it didn't get super cool in the retreat. But right now it's doing fine. Houston and Dallas, we have another 10% of our business, and that market has held up as well. Some of the western state markets, with the exception of California, where we are not in the Inland Empire or the Central Valley, we're really just coastal and around the Bay Area out there. We're comfortable with that market. But Arizona and Vegas and Nevada and the Midwest, they have a long way to come back from.
Okay. We're almost finishing up. A couple of quick questions. The land, you guys used to be big buyers of land, maybe it unentitled or entitled. Are you guys starting to buy more land again? And if you are, is it all already entitled for building? Or what's your viewpoint there?
Sure. We've spent approximately $550 million on land in the last 15 months, the last five quarters. We had gone two or three years before that without purchasing any. So that's kind of our perspective, that the value of land had reached a low point 12 to 15 months ago. And we continue to look for opportunities to buy land. We'll generally only buy entitled land if land is unapproved, unentitled. We may put it under an option contract, but in the past and currently, we generally only buy land once it's approved and entitled. Particularly in today's market, we're buying land that outright without option contracts, because many of the sellers are in a distressed situation and are not in a position to give an option.
Interesting. So that changed from way back when, where everyone's looking for options, and now people are just trying to get out.
Sure. It was always in our best interest to do an option contract. So our historical operating model would be to find a piece of ground, go to the owner and say, look, your ground is currently zoned, let's say agricultural, it's worth $3,000 an acre is that, I'll give you a deposit on it, and you sign this agreement, and if and when I get it approved sometime over the next 5 or 7 years to be residential, I will pay you $50,000 an acre for it. And if I don't get it approved or it doesn't get rezoned, then I get my deposit back, or in some cases I may let you keep that deposit for giving me that option. But, ideally, if I did get it approved, it was no longer worth $50,000 an acre, which is what I paid the seller for it. It was worth $100,000 an acre. So we kept some of the appreciation that other builders who were not as land as much a land developer as we are would not keep, and that helped our gross margins.
Got it. That makes sense.
Those opportunities just aren't there to the same extent now as they were before.
And so that market, I mean, the land, it seems like the whole land buying, land acquisition market has completely changed over the last 5 years.
Well, I think, you know, in the early 90s, when the RTC was out there, that was your one-stop shopping for land. And many real estate companies, including Toll Brothers, took advantage of it and made great land purchases at very attractive pricing. As the market heated up, the concept of optioning land became more prevalent and more appropriate, and we took advantage of that. As land values declined, to the extent you had optioned land, you lost less money than if you had owned it. And now we're in another situation where the predominant disposers of land are people who are just trying to wash their hands of it. They're not interested in giving an option, or they don't have the time to do it.
Yep. And, okay, the final two questions are, you founded and operated a successful finance accounting consulting practice. Tell us about this and then how you came to Toll Brothers.
Sure. When I was at Ernst & Young, I ran the real estate practice in the Philadelphia area, and I left Ernst & Young for a position at a large regional developer, and I was the CFO and the director of operations there, and I learned a lot and had a great time and decided to branch out on my own and become a consultant to many of my former clients at Ernst & Young, as well as other relationships I had, and I really enjoyed that and I had a great time. But then Joel called me up, Joel Rassman, when he had discovered he had leukemia, and asked me if I wanted to sign on to Toll Brothers, and so I left that consultancy by the wayside for the great opportunity to work alongside and ultimately succeed Joel. And it's been great. I've really enjoyed it, and I've learned a lot, and it's a great organization I find myself in.
Very cool. The last question is, you're very active in community and civic organizations, such as Catholic Leadership Institute, the Radnor Education Foundation. Tell us about these and what made you want to get involved in these two, or what you're looking to do, you know, regarding foundations and charity work.
Well, I think my personality is such that I can work pretty hard for the day job, but I need a little bit of an outlet to diversify my interests. And so whether that's coaching my kids in baseball or basketball, or as the kids have gotten older and those opportunities are fewer and further between, serve on some boards. I look at the kind of the break from the day-to-day grind as a opportunity to recharge my batteries, focus my energy and attention in some great directions, meet new people, get different perspectives, and actually bring some of those different perspectives into my work environment. So it's important to contribute to the community and to give back, and it's a great opportunity to grow yourself as a person, grow your networks, and actually contribute some great positives, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. But I'm sure you are. We want to thank Marty Connor for joining us today on the Benzinga podcast. For more interesting content, you can download us on iTunes. And again, we want to thank you, Marty, for joining us on Benzinga's podcast today.
It's my pleasure, Jason. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Be sure to subscribe in iTunes. You can find a link to subscribe right off the Benzinga homepage. If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave a review on iTunes. The music you are listening to is Beethoven Virus by Banya and is available on the Internet Archive. All Benzinga podcasts are released under Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license, and all other rights are reserved.